vivo qualitative data analysis software empowers researchers around the world to discover rich insights within their qualitative data. This podcast gives you unique insights into the methods, the processes, and the passions of researchers. Welcome to the InVivo podcast, Between the Data.
Thanks for joining us today. I'm Stacey Penna, the Engagement and Enablement Director at Lumavero. Today's podcast is with Dr. Deborah Gray, Professor of Marketing at Central Michigan University. We will be discussing her research on the benefits of businesswomen networking on the golf course based on her article, Getting in the Game, Putting Golf at the Forefront of Your Networking Toolbox, published in Business Horizons. So welcome, Deborah.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I'm excited to talk with you.
Yeah. And I'm excited too, because I'm a golfer. And so when I saw your article, I was like, oh, this is so cool. I want to learn more. And I want to get better in my golf game, but that's not what we'll be discussing today.
Well, I think that is common amongst all golfers, right?
That's right. So first off, how did you become interested in researching golf networking for women?
Well, that's kind of a long story. Well, I became interested largely just based on observation. I had a friend, a childhood friend who lived on a golf course, and she didn't golf and I didn't golf, but that golf course was just always drawing me. And so when my kids got a little bit older, in my 30s, I started golfing. And then I started asking, my immediate friendship group didn't golf. So I started looking beyond that to find women to golf with. And I was just shocked at how few women there were to golf with, and bummed, of course. So that really started things. It's been a couple of decades of just observing, going out and looking for women on the golf course. And when I would find one, internally sort of jump for joy and then try and go network with that person. Can I golf with you? Can I put you in my network? And so as I built that golf network, and just keep looking and observing what's happening on the golf course, it was really interesting, because you do that enough times and you start to realize, oh, there's a couple of different things happening here. And I was able to spot those business golfers. So I started taking notes. It's clear they're golfing for business. And sometimes I would verify that, just say hello and how's it going, and, you know, sort of do some undercover intelligence. And as I was finding those groups of people, there were even fewer women golfers. So that's kind of what started it all, was where are all of the women doing business on the golf course? And here we are today.
Great. Thank you. How long has golf been used as a networking tool?
Oh, wow. Golf has been used as a networking tool in business since the 1900s. And even longer in Europe. Andrew Carnegie and John D. Rockefeller were avid golfers, and their love of golf was highlighted in the media. And it really reinforced this notion that golf was the sport for business, particularly if you wanted to be successful. And then there are other just things about golf that make it conducive for conducting business. But in those early days, it was about building clubhouses with the idea of I can hobnob with people who can help me, or I can help them. And so, yeah, it's been done for a long time. And because there weren't women in business in those years, this has sort of been perpetuated through the years, where I don't think women are intentionally excluded. It's just been this cultural thing that's been very slow to change.
What are the benefits when you network with golf?
I think I want to answer that, kind of break it down into a couple of different parts, because the sport itself is sort of built into the answer of that. So golf, unlike other sports, is something where you can talk and do it. And so if we think about sports like, for example, basketball, or think about maybe building a relationship while in spinning class or soccer, you're breathless. And it's also hard to eat and drink. And so golf is a sport where the sport itself is conducive. You can eat and drink. The other cool thing about golf for business that makes it good for networking is it does accommodate all ages and skill levels. So good golfer, not so good golfer, young, old, that handicapping system is really, really ideal for business. Golf also accommodates a lot of different social situations. So golfing with a foursome, for example, but also something that's done a lot in business is golfing for charity purposes. And that historic golf outing that we get invited to every year. So that's another piece of it. Again, you can eat and drink while golfing. And then I would say probably the most important part of the sport itself that really makes it conducive for networking is a round of golf takes about 4 hours to play. And some people go, oh my gosh, I have 4 hours ahead of me. But that can be a good thing. And it can give you some advantages that you won't get from a 1 hour lunch or from a 2 hour dinner. And so there is that longer period of time with a slow pace and food and drink, and that noise thing is not happening in the background. So it really gives you an opportunity to get to know someone because of that longer period of time. A trend right now in golf is to golf nine, just play nine instead of 18. And I am doing a little bit of digging into that. I don't know that that's taken off in business, but I think that's going to be something to look at in the future. And then there are other things about golf that really make it great for networking in terms of, do you really want to do business with this person? Do you really want to build a business relationship? Can you trust them? So golf is a game of integrity, and a round of golf can tell you a lot about someone's integrity. So that's a really good trait. It's also a game of manners and respect, which can tell you about some character values of a person. Are they maintaining the required level of respect on the golf course? Are they throwing things? It's my favorite to see a golf club flailed in the air. Do you want to do business with someone like that? Or the person who's fluffing a ball or dropping a ball? So the sport itself and then some of the characteristics of the sport make it very conducive to networking.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm lucky enough to be in a league and I play with women every Thursday evening. And it's been really fun because you said two hours normally for nine, 4 hours for 18. And you do get to know people really well, you know, so you get that bonding experience with them.
So, yeah. And like I said, you can golf with someone for 2 hours as opposed to going to lunch with someone for 2 hours. And I think you can get a better sense of, do I want to golf with that person again? Do I want to hang out with them socially? Do I want to become a friend to that person? So it's good outside of the business arena. But yeah, I've made so many friends because you just really get to know someone in that longer stretch of time.
I agree. So why aren't more women golfing for business and learning to better leverage the golf as a networking tool that can benefit their careers, particularly you're studying women in marketing and sales?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can give you three reasons, and then there are some peripheral reasons. First, there are, and I found this in my research and also in some focus groups that I'm conducting right now, there's some women who just don't want to golf. They don't want to, they're not interested. So there's that group of people. And of course, there are men who don't want to golf. So there's that one. The second one is homophily. We tend to be drawn to people who are like us. We tend to be drawn to activities that we're comfortable doing. And so we, as women, that's even more so true than it is for men. And when you look at the networking literature, this is one of the things that really got me interested in this. The networking literature, and I'm going to give the bad news here for women, but it suggests that women don't build as powerful networks as men. And when I read that, I went, oh, that can't be true. That's not fair. Why is that? And it is just a gender difference. You know, women tend to build networks based on people that they like. So it's that likeness and that true to self of, gosh, I'm not going to network with someone that, you know, I don't like their personality or whatever about them. But men are either intentionally or unintentionally, they just end up being more strategic because they're willing to put that aside. So there was a really interesting research that sort of took apart the networks of men and women and has been borne out several times after. And that is men's networks tend to be wider and also deeper, and that depth tends to go above them. So their network has more powerful people, where women tend to network with people who are about on our same level. And that's a gender difference. So homophily is that is what I would say is the second answer there. And then the third answer is work-life balance. We are in a modern era, right? But child rearing and now caring for family with those baby boomers aging and caring for family members is just usually it just falls on the shoulders of women and not on men. So there's that structural family barrier. And this one I'm seeing borne out in the research that I'm currently conducting. And then I would say there are some peripheral reasons. Again, golf being a legacy sport. So passed on from men to men. There's that end of it. And there's what I would characterize as gender modesty. I can't tell you how many women I've invited to golf or said, hey, you know, do you want to take up golf? And it's, I don't think I could hit the ball. Well, why not? Why can't you hit the ball? So there's that gender modesty thing that is just different, where men would tend to just go, you know, oh, I'm going to hit it. Women, we just don't think that way.
Just because like 2-4 hour, you know, that's a long time being away on a weekend. So, and now they're older, so I can go back. And also, yeah. And what's interesting too, to me is I see women of all ages. I play with some women 70, 80 that play golf. And that's what a beauty of golf. You can have a great swing and hit the ball far and you don't have to have a lot of power, right? It's all about the club and your swing. That's interesting. But I have heard that too from friends. They get nervous about, oh, I can't, you know, do that.
This podcast is sponsored by Lumavero, developers of Invivo and other software designed by and for data experts to illuminate powerful new insights that help customers make decisions with confidence. If you're looking for a better way to collaborate and share Invivo projects with your colleagues or team, try using Invivo Collaboration Cloud with the 14-day trial.
I'd really love to dig into that because I just don't know where that comes from. And like you said, from my own experience, yeah, you don't have to crush the ball. You don't have to be super strong. Really making contact with the ball is more important than that. But funny story, my mother-in-law, who's 20 years my senior, she still beats me every round. I mean, she can shoot. I'll shoot in low 40s and be super happy. Boy, she can still shoot in the high 30s.
Yeah, I know. It's all about going straight.
Yes. Being consistent. Yes. Yeah, there is something for that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Avoiding the woods.
avoiding the woods. And how many shots that saves. And so, you know, these are some of the things that when I try and get, you know, a colleague or a friend or another woman golfing, these are some of the things that I talk about. Hey, you're at an advantage if you can't hit it long, because the chances of your ball going so errant are less.
Yeah, that is true. That is very true. So now sort of switching to your research process, can you describe how you used content analysis?
To better understand if golf helps women in business, and if it does, how, we used content analysis to analyze a purposeful sample of 100 articles over 20 years. And so purposeful sample, what the heck is that? A purposeful sample, also known as a purposive sample, is a non-probability sample that's based on the characteristics of the population and the objective of the study. So in this case, we wanted women, and we also wanted that career networking aspect. And so that was why we only wanted to look at our, we didn't want to just pull a random sample of articles because our sample size would be too small. And that's very common in social science research. The other thing is that 100 articles, why 100 articles? I've been asked that question a lot. What's the magic with 100? In my own experience doing focus group and other qualitative research through the years, 100 just seemed reasonable. And I knew that 100 was a lot. And we were willing to put the time, effort, and money in if the 100 wasn't enough. Now, it turned out that we had saturation at about the 57th article, which was very good. So we were very confident in our results because we did analyze 500 pages of data. The other question that I'm asked is, well, why 20 years? Why just 2 decades? And that was something that we really had a hard time settling on until we started digging into, okay, what is it that we want to look at And when did this start? And so what we landed on was, okay, when did women become equal or about equal as it has gotten in the workforce in terms of numbers? So about 50% of women in business, in terms of college education, and then in terms of earnings. And we identified that point as about the year 2000. And so that was why 20 years.
Interesting. And so how did you use Envivo to assist with your content analysis?
Oh my gosh, Envivo was a lifesaver for us. I have used it in previous studies, but particularly in this one, like I said, just a lifesaver. So what we did is we imported each of the 100 articles into Envivo. So we didn't PDF file format, but Envivo will accept any format. That was just, you know, our own choice. So we had 500 pages of data, and then we went sentence by sentence, word by word, paragraph by paragraph, identifying themes. We did 3 iterations of this. So we did one, we stopped. So one full iteration, we did the same thing 3 times over. And then the fun begins, because then it's one click. And my favorite thing to do when I first get the data in there is to do a word cloud, so I can visually see, is there something there? And so comparing word cloud from iteration 1, 2, 3, and then doing some other things with the data, we were able to see, okay, yeah, we've got it. This is the same study, basically, we've conducted 3 times. But yeah, it was just so fun to get in there and play around and then really learn, you know, about this topic. But Envivo, you know, I was thinking about it. My colleagues and I were talking about using Envivo, and we were kind of laughing and saying, you remember the days when we used to print this stuff out and highlight with different colored highlighters and write something in the margin? And it's just so easy to just highlight with your mouse and type in a theme, and Envivo just makes it easy. I was harder collecting the 100 articles than it was to analyze it.
So how did you work as a team?
Well, the team started as 2 people. So the first author and second author, myself and my colleague, Nancy Hicks, we are both golfers and we're talking about doing this study for a long time. So when we started on it and we started wondering, okay, what about these articles? And we started wondering what has been published in mainstream press about this topic. We had no idea how difficult finding those articles would be. We both considered ourselves to be pretty adept at using library databases. And so we found out that there is a lot to it when you're looking for something just so very specific. So we worked with our business librarian and we were taking a lot of her time, and we finally just invited her on as a third author. She is not a golfer, but has worked for GM as a business librarian, has done a lot in business. And so we basically set her on finding our data set. And so that was really very unexpected for us. And then I am the person with the experience of the content analysis. So there were 3 of us with 3 very different skill sets, but it worked out great.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would say my takeaway from that experience is I need to think more creatively about my co-authors and what others can bring to the table. I mean, I know that intuitively, but I've really limited my research to what I know how to do. And I've learned maybe I should not do that. I can do other research, use other data sets if I can just find others who are interested in the topic and can bring that piece to the table.
Yeah.
So I was really frustrated at first, but it worked out for the best in the end.
Yeah, great. And what were the primary themes based on your analysis?
Okay, so we came up with 3 primary themes. The first one is the benefits of golf in business. And again, one of the reasons that we embarked on this study is it's just this common assumption that golf is good for business, but no one has actually done a study where they looked at, is it actually good for business? So the first theme that the data suggested was the benefits of golf for women in business. And some of those benefits that we found throughout the data set was creating new relationships. And of course, I experienced that in my own life. So that was not a surprise. Maintaining existing relationships, demonstrating the character of others was a theme that I found a little bit surprising. Now, I know that intuitively, that it was on the mind of women, that they cognitively think, I can get to know this person and know a little bit more about their character was really cool. And then literally the words breaking through the glass ceiling, we found over and over. And then, of course, saying that without really using those words. That kind of sums up the benefits of golf for women in business. The second theme was reasons why women don't golf. We found this was also very interesting. I talked a little bit earlier about gender modesty, and that seemed to be something that was quite prolific in the data. This idea that I can't do it, or how can I do it, or it's not my thing. And then work-life balance, and again, homophily, that tendency to just stick with what we know and with the people that we know and the experiences that we know. And then lastly, the effects of not golfing. The biggest effect was being left out of the conversations that happen, not just on the golf course, but also in the office about the golf course. So those were the three main themes that emerged from the data set.
We'll take a quick break from the episode. To find Dr. Gray's work, visit her Central Michigan University webpage.
So based on your findings, what are your recommendations for managers and women in business?
I think it's really important to acknowledge the networking differences between men and women. In this era where we're trying, in some cases, trying to be more gender neutral, I think this is a really good example of an area in business where you don't want to be gender neutral. So managers, I believe they can do a better job of educating both men and women about the networking differences between men and women. So there's that piece of it. But also, I think managers have to do a better job of just doing networking training. What makes a good network? How do you build a network? And that's not necessarily even golf related. That is just business tools related. I also think that organizations, companies, corporate America can do a better job for both men and women. You know, my thing is golf, but there's other things out there. But providing opportunities for women, particularly that happen during business hours. Because of that work-life balance thing, women really need to accomplish more during the physical parameters of the actual workday. So why aren't we offering more opportunities for women to learn how to golf or to network during business hours and for professional development? And that brings to mind, I was conducting a focus group with some business women last week in the Detroit area. The other issue is cost. Golf is expensive. And I guess I hadn't really thought about that too much. I used equipment for so long. And I don't think it occurs to most people to go find used equipment. But that's something that I think managers can communicate. But one of the women, actually two of the women in this session specifically said, golf is expensive. I just got out of college and I'm paying off student loans. And I don't even know if I can afford golf clubs, let alone golf lessons. So these are some of the barriers that women face and that managers can change.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, because golf can, though. What I find, there's so many good public courses now, right? Yes. Out there that I remember as a kid, but yeah, it's great in my area anyway. I'm lucky.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's another thing that can be communicated, that there, I think oftentimes we associate golf with a golf club, with a private club, and there's more public clubs than there are private clubs. Mm-hmm. So communicating that. Mm-hmm. And that kind of jogs my memory. This didn't come out of the study per se, but some of the research we were reading about golf and women, just gender-based research, I think the golf industry can do a better job women represent 26% of all golfers. And I know that the LPGA and some other groups have some things that they're doing, hashtag invite her, hashtag drive on, to encourage more women to golf. But the golf industry isn't doing a lot to change the golf course structure itself. I was looking at some research for this study, and some of the differences are in that golf course itself that perpetuates this difference between the genders in terms of where the tees are located. So hitting from different tees, right? Golf equipment, you know, all of these things just really make it less than a perfect environment for women. And to that extent, another recommendation that I would make for managers is really training men and women golfing with women, not to assume that women are going to hit from that forward tee. Mm-hmm. And call it a forward tee. It's not the ladies' tee. It's a forward tee. But operating on that assumption, I think, is good for men and for women. I know I'm very appreciative when most of the people I golf with are men, but I'm very appreciative when the assumption isn't made. Mm-hmm. Which tee will you be golfing from today, Deborah? Because we, you know, we don't do that with women, but get a group of guys together who has a senior, and they will say, are you using the senior tee? Which again should be the forward tee for men. Yeah, I think the golf industry has got some work to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good input. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. So what are your current research projects? I think you talked about a focus group you were just in.
Yeah, so I am doing a follow-up to this study. And instead of, I'm collecting primary data. So instead of using secondary data, I'm collecting primary data. And the goal is to just figure out from women in business at all stages of their career, what do they think about using golf for business? Why aren't they using golf for business if they're not? I want to dig a little bit more into this notion that I spoke at a conference at a big corporation, a Fortune 100 company, about a year ago. And I had someone in the audience who got so upset. And her point, which very valid, was, wait, why do I have to golf to fit in with the men? Why can't the men stay in the office and knit? And while I laughed, I thought, yeah, I mean, it's a really good point, but we can't change that in a day. And are men going to stay in the office? You know, she used knitting to be kind of fun, but are they going to stay in the office just because they can include more women? I don't see that happening. So there's got to be an answer out there. And I'd love to find what is that answer where we can find, it doesn't have to be golf, but if it is golf, how can we make it more inclusive? And if it isn't golf, what can we do about that? What is it? And how can women sort of not be penalized for not golfing? That's what I'm working on right now. I'm working with a lot of corporate America, traveling around the country. I am doing some online focus groups, but if there's any corporate listeners out there who are interested in participating, I would love to conduct a focus group at your company.
That's great. Sounds really interesting. I can't wait to read the research. My last question is, what's one piece of advice you would give women starting to play golf?
Get lessons. And I say that from experience. I had always wanted to golf, and my thinking was, how hard can this be? And it can be hard. So I just really struggled. I just called a bunch of local golf courses and said, hey, do you have a women's league? Could I hop on? And so sight unseen, I hopped on this league. I just did everything the wrong way. And I struggled for 3 years. And then once I got lessons, I thought, gosh, why did I struggle? You know, why did I think I could just pick this up? I wouldn't do any other thing without doing a quick Google or watching a YouTube video on how to do it. So yeah, I would say get lessons. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I agree. I think anything you're trying to learn new is always good to get best practices early on.
Yeah, it will just reduce that frustration. Yes. I mean, if you could just hit the ball a couple of times and feel that you can connect, mm-hmm. there goes your confidence level. Mm-hmm. And at least in my own experience and other women that I've talked to, I have several friends who won't golf. Well, because I tried it and it's so hard. So I think you got to give yourself a fair shot Yeah. At it. And you can do lessons anywhere. My other suggestion in terms of lessons, Topgolf is such a big thing right now. You can take lessons at Topgolf. That's a very low risk, high reward environment. You can just goof around at Topgolf and even having others show you how to hit the ball. But I've not done the lessons, but I have looked into the lessons at Topgolf. So I think you don't have to go to a golf course. And to that extent, there's a lot of off course networking that happens. Mm-hmm. If you're not a person to network on the golf course, hey, invite some people to Topgolf to do that.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like fun.
It's so much fun. I really enjoy it. Yeah.
So thank you, Deborah, for talking with us. And thanks to those tuning in. Listeners, if you enjoyed learning about golf networking and the benefits for women, we'd appreciate your support by rating and subscribing to the In Vivo podcast. This helps us to share these amazing narratives with the research community. So thank you, Deborah.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for Between the Data. If you enjoyed this podcast and want to hear more about In Vivo podcasts and community events, please visit go.invivobyqsr.com/community or email me, Stacy Penna, at s.penna@qsrinternational.com.